ago about bookending some of our work conversations with a discussion of impact. Obviously, we've had a very, very successful emphasis on Torah and Torah study throughout the 4 U's, with the special meeting with Rabbi Bender, with Rabbi Sabalowski in the question and answers yesterday. We're very, very excited. And in fact, I will share with Rabbi Shai Schefter that one of the first things when this is the first time we've been in Long Island for the conference in a couple of years. We've been in New Jersey the past couple of years. And we were talking about involving the community and some of the leadership of the community. And really one of the very, very first people that we spoke about and tried to work some of the conference schedule around was having the opportunity to hear from Rav Shai Schefter, who really brings two things to the table besides a particular warmth and personal relationship with so many of our educators in NCSY. But obviously his Torah scholarship, level of learning, commitment to being Marbitz Torah in our community is... His legend is fast growing in that regard. His impact is ever growing, and it's a big success for us to have him. But as I mentioned earlier this morning, he is a person who is very, very familiar with the work of NCSY and very, very committed to bolstering our efforts and, in general, the efforts of our community in reaching so many who have not yet been reached, both within the community, from the yeshiva backgrounds, and from outside of our yeshiva community, from the public schools in which we work. Rav Shai genuinely understands some of our methodologies, some of our challenges, and some of the approaches, and I know appreciates and is a phenomenal role model on how to reach such a wide variety of Jews, and it's a big zechus for us to be able to close our conference with words of Torah and Chizuk from Rav Shai Schefter.
Thank you, Rabbi Benowitz. It's really a great honor to be here. And I'm sorry you spent 3 days listening to everybody else. I hope this is not just going to... I hope it's of somewhat a meaning to all of you. So Parshas Bo, this week's Parsha, we speak about the climax, the very end of the Shibud Mitzrayim. And if we look back a few Parshas to where the Shibud Mitzrayim really began, to where the whole story started, so we're told in Parshas Vayigash, Ves Yehuda Shalach Lefanav, very famously, Yehuda is sent ahead of the rest of the Jewish people, ahead of the rest of the Jewish family, Lahoros Lefanav Goshna, to teach them, Rashi tells us from the Medrash, to teach, to set up an educational system. And many Mefarshim have been bothered that why of all the Shvatim who could have been chosen to set up the educational system, to go ahead of the family, why was Yehuda the one chosen? If not Yehuda, it should have been someone else. We most naturally would have imagined that it could have been Yisachar. After all, Yisachar is the one who is the greatest Torah scholar. Yisachar is the one who is the most dedicated, who has the most fervent commitment to Talmud Torah, so he should have been the one to set up the educational system and to go ahead of the family to Mitzrayim and make sure everything was in place before they got there. Many suggestions have been given, but one that's particularly relevant, I believe, to this conference and probably to all of our lives is the comment of the famed Tiferet Shlomo. Tiferet Shlomo was one of the great Hasidic Gedolim in the 1800s, and the Tiferet Shlomo points out that when you think about what is necessary to cultivate and to ensure a bright and a successful educational system, how do you make sure that you're going to have a family of the Jewish people going down to Mitzrayim, to a foreign land, to a foreign culture, to a foreign society, and yet they are planning on being successful? The way to do that is not by sending the most learned. It's not by making sure that the greatest intellectual is tapped into. That would have been the natural choice. Yisachar would have made sense, but that's not what was necessary. What you need in order to have that is someone like Yehuda. Yehuda is the person who at the beginning of the parsha says, Anochi Arvenu, I am willing to take responsibility. He steps up to his father and he says, I will hold myself accountable. I am going to stand up and make sure that I do what's right, that I'm going to have that commitment, that I'm going to make sure I do everything to further that commitment and bring it to a fruition. That is something that's necessary when setting up an educational system. And that says that the Tiferet Shlomo, although Yisachar may have been the most obvious and natural choice, Yisachar was not the one chosen for this task because, after all, Yisachar was not the one needed. We need someone who's willing to take responsibility. We need someone who has a commitment. And I know that this room is filled with NCSY senior advisors, some junior advisors, who each is obviously extremely deeply committed to the strong and vibrant continuity of the Jewish people. That's not a question. That's not something that any of us are unsure about. And each of us obviously assume a tremendous responsibility. I can say that it's extremely uncomfortable for me to speak at an NCSY conference, certainly at one which discusses the real policies of NCSY. I really am not a person to do that, or to address, and to give mussar, or to talk about any of the incredible avodas hakodesh that all of you are involved in. All I can do today, this afternoon, it's about to say this morning, I just came back from LA, so it is this morning for me, but all I can do is share for a few minutes what I believe are my most difficult and most personal struggles. It's the struggles that I face that I think are probably very similar to the struggles that many who are involved in NCSY on a very serious level might face, and I hope that all of us here can gain a little bit from the thoughts that I'm going to share. So I personally do not work in the world of Kiruv. I wish I had more to do with NCSY. I wish I understood better. I wish I was able to do the work that all of you do, but it's just not what I've had the pleasure of doing for the last many years of my life. I know very well the incredible work of NCSY, but my life passion, like all of yours, is to shoulder responsibility. My life passion, like all of yours, is driven by making sure that we do our best to show Jewish people all over the world, wherever we might be and whoever we interact with, what the great and profound impact and influence the Torah has on my life and the Torah has on all of our lives. And I find that to be a tremendous privilege. It's an awesome responsibility. But at the same time, I consider that incredibly challenging. And that's what I want to talk about. I know that I'm not involved in NCSY, but I think that in a certain level we connect in the work that we do. So let's begin with the Gemara in Maseches Sota Daf Mem Tes. The Gemara says a whole great deal throughout Shas about Rabbi Akiva. We know a lot about the lifetime, about the trials, about the differences, about the challenges that Rabbi Akiva had, and all the distinguishing characteristics about him that made him so unique. He was a towering figure of the age of the Tanaim. That's not a question. That's something that's clear if you look through all the Ma'amar Chazal. But the Gemara tells us that upon the death of Rabbi Akiva, what was lost was Mishameis Rabbi Akiva Batla Kavanat Torah. When Rabbi Akiva passed away, the incredible expression of Kavanat Torah that he embodied throughout his lifetime was lost. And that, says the Gemara, is something that was a great loss for the Jewish people. Now, it sounds like a very beautiful statement to make. It sounds like Rabbi Akiva was obviously a very incredible figure of his generation, and therefore when he was lost, the Kavanat Torah aspect that he represented was gone. But when you think about it, and when you look at that Gemara more carefully, this is really a very problematic statement. Because the Gemara says also, Mishameis Rabbi Gamliel, Batla Kavanat Torah. When Rabbi Gamliel, who was before Rabbi Akiva, passed away, when he was left, when the world was bereft of him, Batla Kavanat Torah. There was no longer a sense of Kavanat Torah any longer. So what does it mean? How do you explain? On the one hand, the Gemara says Rabbi Akiva passes away, no more Kavanat Torah. Then many years later, Rabbi Akiva himself passes away, not Rabbi Gamliel, and the Gemara says yet again, Batla Kavanat Torah. What exactly does this mean? How do we reconcile both of those statements, both of those sentiments of Chazal? So Rav Asher Weiss once told me a suggestion that I think is a very beautiful one, it's a powerful one on its own, and it's a suggestion to explain this Gemara. He said that there are two forms of Kavanat Torah, and each of them is very different. Each of them is very unique. So one of them is what we consider to be the outward, the extrinsic, the external expression of respect for the Torah. Like the Gemara says in Megillah, Daf Chaf Aleph, that in the lifetime of Rabbi Gamliel, there was such an outward expression of Kavanat Torah that they would only stand when they taught Torah or when they learned Torah. Nobody would ever dare to sit down. That's how much they felt the Torah meant to them. And that, says the Gemara, that extrinsic, that outward expression of Kavanat Torah, of Limudat Torah, was something that was lost when Rabbi Gamliel passed away. Once Rabbi Gamliel died, the Gemara says, they no longer stood up when they studied Torah. That external expression of Kavanat Torah was gone, was lost with the passing of Rabbi Akiva. I'm sorry, of Rabbi Gamliel. However, there is a second form of Kavanat Torah, and that's a more intrinsic, that's a more inherent form of Kavanat Torah, and that is the mode and the style, the approach that one has toward learning and teaching Torah. Like the Gemara says about Rabbi Akiva, that hakol kotz v'kotz, on every little tag, on every drop of ink that we find in the Sefer Torah, Rabbi Akiva was darish tili tilim shalalachos. Rabbi Akiva felt that the attitude, the approach, the outlook that he had when he looked at every word of Torah was something that exuded Kabbalah Torah without him doing anything else. Just the way that he looked, that he approached every word of Torah that he came across was Kula Omer Kabbalah. It was just absolutely an expression of his appraisal of how much he valued, of how much worth every word, every aspect, every Tagin HaSefer Torah, every drop of ink of Torah is actually worth. That is the second expression of Kabbalah Torah. And that form of Kabbalah Torah was lost when Rabbi Akiva passed away. It was not an external expression. It was just what he represented, what he was, and his whole approach, his whole gishah, his whole attitude toward every word of Torah that he studied. The Avodas HaKodesh that we are all collectively involved in is obviously an open display of how much we value the Torah, how much we study the Torah, what our approach is to the Torah itself. And as we know, our congregants or our students or our public school kids who we spend time with, whoever it might be, they look at us as ambassadors, they look at us as people who embody everything that the Torah is about. And we spend time trying to publicly state, trying to show to all those who we have influence on what the great beauty of the Torah is, what the elegance of living a Torah lifestyle is, what it means to teach authentic Torah, which I find is a tremendous challenge in and of itself. It's not so easy to teach authentic Torah. Very often we get caught up in the fact that we have to tell stories to engage people and we have to do all kinds of things, but you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised, and I've seen it in our community, that when you show, when you present the absolute, unadulterated, authentic Torah in an explanatory manner, when you give it, not dumbing anything down, but when you give the Torah unadulterated exactly the way it is, to people who might not have had the opportunity to learn in yeshiva, and obviously you're dealing with the youth, and in our community we're dealing often with adult population, not as much with the youth, but when you show them the sweetness, the beauty, the kavod haTorah that's just intrinsic in the way we approach every word in Torah, how we take it seriously, how it's something that we want to impart, it's something that we want to share, that is something that is kulo omer kavod. There is no greater honor that we can give the Ribbono Shel Olam and his Torah than what it is that we do every day. That we bestow the honor upon the Torah by showing that everything that we approach and every word that we learn, every word that we share, is something that we value and is something that we so deeply appreciate. Along with all of that, along with the public position that we take on sharing our expression of Kabbalah Torah, on sharing how much value the Torah has to our personal and professional lives, Rav Hirsch points out that there comes a great concern and a tremendous challenge. And Rav Hirsch writes this in his commentary on the Siddur. Rav Hirsch is wondering, why is it that it's necessary on Friday night to make Kiddush both in Shul and then once again at home? If the whole objective is just to be Mekadesh HaShabbos, have I not fulfilled my obligation by doing so in Shul? After all, it should be even greater. I'm doing it in Shul in the presence of my whole community. We're being Mekadesh Shabbos together. Why is it necessary to do it again at home? Obviously, there are those who are not in Shul, but let's say you're in a family where everyone does come to Shul, and there's no one who's left without hearing Kiddush. And Rav Hirsch points out, and it's so beautiful, and you look at it inside, I'm not going to do justice by just suggesting what Rav Hirsch is saying, but he points out that very often, those of us who are in public positions have this deep challenge, and we face this great concern. We can stand up and scream from the rooftops. We can stand up in front of our communities, in front of our schools, in front of our constituents, in front of our students, and we can say, Torah is beautiful, the Torah is amazing, this is what you should believe in, this is what we should be doing. We make Kiddush Barabbas, we say Kiddush and Shul on Friday night, and it's something that works, and we're Mekayim the Mitzvah. But very often, says our verse, the Kiddush that has to be made at home is forgotten about. To take all of our messages, to take all of our experiences, to take everything that we're saying out in public, and all the Hashva that we're trying to have, and perhaps successfully have it, to take that and bring it back into our own homes, Rav Hirsch writes, is sometimes extremely difficult. And it's more difficult sometimes than the act itself of going in public. Because it takes a tremendous amount of self-awareness, a tremendous amount of understanding and deep thought about how we can integrate all of those messages that we go out in public and share into the lives that we live in the privacy of our own homes. And therefore, says Rav Hirsch, the Torah has taught us on Friday night, when we have the opportunity to be Mekadesh as HaShabbos, don't just leave the Kiddush for Shul. That's an important aspect of what every Eved Hashem is supposed to be doing. And that's what all of us are doing. We're all going out in public and we're all sharing that message. But Rav Hirsch writes that the Friday night message is, don't forget that that Kiddush must be recited once again at home. Those messages need to be repeated and need to be inculcated and thought about in a very serious way when we get home as well. My father once told me in the name of my grandfather that the Mishnah writes in Pirkei Avos, Al-Tadin Eschaberecha Ad Shetagia Lemkom. So the simple understanding of the Mishnah is quite clear, it's obvious to all of us, that one should never judge anyone else until you're in their similar situation. Because you never know all the circumstances, you don't know what goes behind the decision that's made, you don't really know all the context that went into the act that's being performed. But my father told me an alternative suggestion, perhaps, Al-Tadin Eschaberecha, if you really want to get a measure of who a person is, you really want to understand what is this person all about, what is their essence, what do they represent, and how do they live their lives, tagia lemkomo. Don't go into their professional life and see what do they say to the public. Go to their most private home and see how they act there. Go see, are all those messages that are being shared in the public sphere, all the influence that they have, is it something that they live by? Is it something that they truly value? Tagia lemkomo, go to the person's home and see, are they making kiddush in the house? Like reverse rights, it's the challenge that we all face, and it's a tremendous challenge. And I think about it so often. After all the public display of Kavod HaTorah that we all represent, after all the shiurim and all the drushas, all the stories, and we make people cry, and we make people laugh, and we have retreats, and we get people together, and we inspire them, do we sometimes forget that the Kiddush at home is more important than all of that? That the self-awareness that needs to be thought about, that the self-perfection that is so much a part of who we are and all that we represent also needs to be there. In a few parshios in the second half of Sefer Shemos, we're going to learn a lot about the detailed instructions of how to properly build a mishkan. And when you look through all of that process and how everybody gave their all for the successful completion of the building of the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu very appropriately is inspired by everything that was done and he's very happy with how everything comes out. And Moshe Rabbeinu offers a tefillah upon the completion of this project. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Yiratzon. It's a beautiful tefillah, Rashi quotes it on Chumash. Yiratzon Shetishre Shechina B'masi Yadecha. May it be the will, Moshe Rabbeinu says, that the Shechina, that the divine presence will reside in your handiwork, in this beautiful Mishkan that you've built, in this edifice. So it's certainly a very appropriate, a very meaningful, a beautiful tefillah that is offered by Moshe Rabbeinu, but if you think back a few parshiyos before, if you consider the way we were introduced to the whole story of building the Mishkan, it would seem that Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah was completely unnecessary. It was extraneous. When we are introduced to the whole concept of having a Mishkan, the Ribbono Shel Olam assures us, and he says, Va'asu li mikdash, if you create for me an edifice, if you make this Mishkan v'shachanti v'sochamti, he gives us his word, that he will dwell in that edifice that we create. So Moshe Rabbeinu, upon the completion, when everything's done, and he's impressed with how it came out, Moshe Rabbeinu now says, Yehi Ratzon, I offer a tefillah, shetishva shechina v'masi adecha. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to offer such a tefillah? We were promised that that was going to happen. We knew that that was going to happen. That's why we built it. We knew that the Shechina was going to come. So we don't need this tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu. And additionally, the Ksav Sofer on Chumash points out another interesting caveat, and that is that normally when one offers a tefillah, you direct the tefillah toward the Ribbono Shel Olam. You say, Yiratzon, Milifnei Avinu Shebashamayim. You address who it is that you want the tefillah to go to. And here all of a sudden Moshe Rabbeinu was very elusive in his tefillah. And he seems to leave out the punchline. He seems to leave out that this is a tefillah that's being offered to the Ribbono Shel Olam on behalf of the Jewish people who just spent so much time, so much effort, so much energy trying to build this beautiful Mishkan. So why is he being so ambiguous? Why is he being elusive in the tefillah that he offers? Suggesting Sab Sofer that perhaps what Moshe Rabbeinu meant to say was the following. Yes, Klal Yisrael, you've just spent a considerable amount of time, of energy, of effort. Everybody gave all that they had for the completion of a most incredible Mishkan, to have this sacred edifice created in the Midbar, in the desert. And Moshe Rabbeinu refers to them and he says, After all that you've given, after all that you've invested, after all that you've done, for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu suggests, Yehi Ratzon. It should be the will not of the Ribbono Shel Olam, but it should be the will of each and every one of you who was involved in building this Mishkan, individually. Shetishra Shechina B'Masi Aleichem. After you step away from this experience of being involved in building a Mishkan, can you take the Shechina home with you? You built something great. You inspired lots of people. You brought something amazing into the world. But can you be sure the Shechina B'Masi Aleichem? In your handiwork? In everything that you do? In your business? In your privacy of your own home? Can the Shechina be comfortable there as well? And that's the profound tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu. It was not directed at all to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We were promised that that was going to happen. It was a tefillah that was offered as an appeal to the Jewish people. We're not always going to be involved in building a Mishkan. We're not always going to be inspiring other people. There are times in life when we walk away from those experiences, and that's where the challenge is. And it's very challenging. Are we honest enough when we walk away from those experiences to say to ourselves, Yehi Ratzon Shetishra Shechina B'Masi Yadeichem? Do we appeal to ourselves, to our friends, to all those who are involved in all the great work that we do and all the inspiration that we give others, that maybe we should think about whether or not the Shechina is proud to have a presence in the lives that we live outside of our public inspiration, outside of our public persona, in the privacy of our own homes, and all that we do when nobody else is watching, when no one else is present? You think about, let's say, a chasen and kala. So they have this fantasy world of Sheva Brachos, and then they have the Shana Rishona, and it's great and everything's wonderful. That's not how we know whether or not they're committed to one another. It's obvious, it's clear that they love each other then. Let's look 5 years down the line. When all that public fanfare is over, when nobody else is looking at them, when nobody's egging them on, when nobody's proud of what they're doing, they're just being themselves. How committed are they then? That's how you know whether the commitment is for real or whether it's something that is not going to last. And that's how we know as public educators, as people who are involved in community work, in the greatest Avodas HaKodesh possible. That's how we know if what we're doing is real. If it's something that's authentic, if it's something that makes the Ribbono Shel Olam proud, or it's something that we should be working on a little bit more. And it's a tremendous challenge because it's so easy to get caught up in the public persona that we are. I can say that one of the greatest challenges that I find, that I have as a rabbi in a big community, as somebody who tries to teach Torah to the best of my ability, I think that this challenge is one that I'm faced with all the time. You give a great shiur, you give a great drasha, powerful message, you make people change something in the way they live their lives, and we spend our whole day going around trying to inspire others, trying to interact with everybody that we can to show them the beauty and give them a lasting impression of how wonderful it is to follow by the ways of the Torah. And we build ourselves up on such a high, and we have a community rallying behind us and going along with what it is that we impart, our messages that are so important to us and that are the guiding fact of our entire lives. But that next step of taking it home, that next step of once in a while inspiring ourselves, I find personally is so much more difficult. And it doesn't mean that everything we've done until then is discredited. It doesn't mean that anything that we've accomplished in public is not worth anything. Of course, it's worth everything. It's worth a lot. But it's only as real as it is for ourselves. It's only as meaningful as those messages really play out in our own lives. The Shem Yishmuel writes such a beautiful and insightful comment. Shem Yishmuel says that the Akris Hayamim, the Navi tells us, the Ribbono Shel Olam expresses his tremendous love for the Jewish people. Why does he love the Jewish people? There could have been many, many reasons why he loves the Jewish people. After all, we've lived through all the terrible oppression throughout all the generations. We've kept on, we've held on to the faith. We've done a lot to make God very proud of us, to make him love us. And yet the Pasuk says, Zacharti lachesed ni'urayich. Why do I love you? Avas kelulosayich. Why do I love you so much? Because lechteich acharai bamidbar be'eretz lozeruah. Because at the time when you were coming out of Mitzrayim, and these parashas that we're reading, you were willing to follow me in the desert. Now says the Shem Yishmuel, did they have an option? Did anyone else know where they can possibly go after they were stuck in the desert? That's what God's proud of us for? Because we followed after His direction, after His lead, as we were traversing through the desert that we had no familiarity with? What does this mean? You love us so much because we follow you? Of course we follow you. Says the Shem Yishmuel, so powerful. What was the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim? The Mora Gadol's Gilu Shechina. This was the most palpable experience of spirituality that we ever had as a people. There was nothing that can compare to that. Hayom Rav Bayanos, Hayardim Yisrael La'achar. Everyone was trembling. The world was upside down. Jewish people and the world never saw anything and never had an experience like that one. And yet, says the Shem Yishmuel, after stepping away from a time and a moment like that, after walking away, being on such a spiritual high, being a part of something that the Ribbono Shel Olam himself was a great part of, left it acharei bamidbar. You were willing to keep on walking. You were willing to keep on growing. You said that's not enough. And that's why God loves us. That's why He's proud of us. Because we bring ourselves, we bring our communities to a higher plateau, to a higher elevation. We say, this is amazing. Look what we've done. B'mor gadol zu gilui shechina. We have brought a more powerful presence of the Shechina into the world. But we never say that that's enough. Left it acharei bamidbar. We always make sure that we push ourselves to the max. And we're willing to keep on walking. We don't stand where we are. We keep on walking, says the Shem Yishmuel, to inspire ourselves, to inspire others, and to reconsider whether or not the job that we just did in elevating our communities and in elevating ourselves was good enough. And what can we do to go further? That's what a conference about NCSY is all about. We do great work. We all do great work. We're all trying our best. But are we trying our best to move forward and to make sure that we have time for self-reflection, to think about what am I walking away with after I bring everyone to a spiritual high, after we have this experience together? Is it something that's meaningful to me? And is it something that I've grown from at all? So the story is told about a prominent Jew from the town of Vilna. And he had a lot of issues. He was a big Askin. He was very involved in the city polemics and all the diatribes and everything that was happening there. And he decides one time he's going to travel to Brisk to visit the famed Beis Halevi to discuss all the issues with him. So he comes to the city, and as he gets there, he begins his extensive conversation with the Beis Halevi, and they're talking about all the issues, and finally, after that's all done, the Beis Halevi says to him, look, when you go back to Vilna, I would suggest the following. There's no need for you in the future to come all the way to Brisk to discuss the issues with me. Yes, I'm the Beis Halevi, but he said, I would suggest that you come to know the homeless people in Vilna. And if you get to know the homeless people in Vilna well enough, they will be able to guide you throughout all the future issues that will come up in your community. No reason to travel to me. So that sounds like a very confusing and very strange request. The homeless people in Vilna are probably not the people who are involved in any of the community issues. They probably don't really have a nuanced perspective and understanding as to what exactly needs to be done and how to address these issues. So he finally turns to the Beis Halevi. He says, how do you think that the homeless people in Vilna are able to give a critical perspective on the Dvarim Ha'olam Dimaruma Shalolam? These are serious issues that we have. These are serious communal problems. Why should the homeless people, who don't really contribute anything to our society, to our community, why do you assume that they're going to be helpful in dealing with these issues? Explain the Beis Halevi. You have a Kohen is considered to be a member of the Beis Aaron. A Levi, he said, is considered to be a member of the Beis Halevi. They are born into a system, they're part of these prestigious families, whether they do anything to deserve that stature in the community or not. They do nothing. You're born into a system, you're grandfathered into a system of being the Beis Aaron and the Beis Halevi, like the Pasuk says, Beis Aaron Baruch Hu Es Hashem, Beis Halevi Baruch Hu Es Hashem. You don't have to do anything. You're a Kohen or a Levi just by your birthright. However, said the Beis Halevi, when you talk about the aspect of life of Yerushalayim, when you talk about what it means to be a Yari Hashem, there we don't find any expression of being a base Yari Hashem. There is no family, there's no pre-existing home that is considered to be the home of the Yirei Shamayim. Because you can't be born into that system. That's in the Beis HaLevi is what I mean when I say, get to know those people who are homeless, the people who don't come from the prestigious families, the people who worked on their own to build their own house, to make the Beis Yirei Hashem that did not exist on its own, that was not a pre-existing status. It was something that they went through life, that they developed on their own, and something that meant something to them. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam mean to me, said the Beis HaLevi? How do I connect with him? How does he have significance and relevance to me in my own life? That's the people that you should get to know in your town, and they're the ones who will be able to give you a nuanced perspective in all that you do. Every day we say in Psuki de Zimra, one of the highlights of Psuki de Zimra is Az Yashir. And in Az Yashir, one of the highlights that we say is that Keli Vanveyu Elokei Avi Vairamamenu. This is my God, and I will elevate him, Elokei Avi, the God of my father, Vairamamenu, and I will lift him up. One of the great Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, Rav Meir Pri Mishlana, always has beautiful comments, but here he writes such an incredible insight that perhaps this pasuk is addressing two divergent groups of people. He writes that there are some people who spend their whole life pursuing, researching, seeking out what exactly God means to me in my life. And they spend the whole life trying to uncover, trying to discover, where am I going to find God? Does he have a presence in everything that I do? Is he prevalent in every activity that I'm involved in? Does he permeate my home, my existence, my experience, my professional life, everything that I do? And on them, says Rav Meir Pri Mishlana, they get to a point where they can actually say, Zeh Keli, this is my God. They can point to something tangible and say, I have been successful in forging a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam on my own. He means something to me. God actually means something significant and special to me. And on those people, he said, we say, Vatan Beyu, that's an amazing accomplishment. But at the same time, he writes, there are those who spend their whole lives boasting and overemphasizing the aspect of Elokei Avi. My father was a great tzaddik. My father, you should see the way he davens with such kavana, and he comes so early to shul, and he puts on his tefillin, and my mother used to sit there and cry over the Shabbos candles. And my grandparents, you should have seen at the Pesach Seder, they would sit there and cry over the bitter marah. They would never eat the chrein like we eat today. They eat the real way, and they would never carry an air. They only ate Pasuk Yisrael and Chol Yisrael and all these things. And we talk about all these great stories, all the great legacy, all the Elokei Avi, all that we stand for, all that we represent, but yet, so often it stops there. We're grandfathered into a system. We lift up the fact that our fathers are great tzaddikim, or our fathers or mothers or grandparents are something special, and we forget that every so often we need to ask ourselves, so what do all those memorable minhagim actually mean to me? What is that whole experience that my grandparents showed me? The family I grew up in, what does it do for me? How does that translate into the life that I live? Do I ever take the time to inspire myself and ask, Zeh Keli, do I have a God of my own? Does he mean anything to me? Is there any significance or relevance that God plays in my own personal life outside, barring all of my grandparents, all of the family that I come from, and all the heritage? So many of us are blessed to come from families where we do have a Elokei Avi. And so many of us deal with students or constituents that don't. And we're proud, and we share all the heritage, all the legacy, all the Masara, all the Menhagim, everything. We share that, and we teach it. And we give it over to others. And I can say that, for me, this has been and this continues to be probably the greatest challenge that I face in my own personal life. I grew up in the home of my father. My father is somebody who has a tremendous relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu on his own. I have been known my whole life as Rabbi Schefter's son, and I can probably just continue to go on being known like that. I don't think most people would know the difference if I did nothing in my life to deserve anything of the titles that I'm given. Nothing. I think most people probably would have noticed. I can get away with it. And of what meaning would life be if that's the way it was lived? If my whole life, if I was just hiding behind the fact that other people think and assume that I have been grandfathered into the system because of who my parents and grandparents are and were, what kind of life would that be? Not only for me, but what kind of life would that be for anybody? And when you think about it, not everybody's father is Rav Schefter, I know. But when you think about it, I think it's very similar to someone who's in a position of leadership in the NCSY context. And the reason why I believe it's similar is because many are viewed by the people that they are mashpia on as the great bastions of Torah. You are the greatest people that they've ever met, many of them. They look at you like perhaps the Gedolei HaDor. And you too can live an entire life hiding behind what other people might think of who you might be. You can go through a whole life just believing in what the followers say about you. And it's very tempting and it's very easy to get lost in that. And it's something I struggle with every day. And I think it's the greatest challenge for someone who's in a position of leadership where people are looking up to you, where people have created a certain image in their heads of who they think you are. And when we look ourselves in the mirror and we think about who we really are, when we pull all that aside, when we peel it away, and we think about barring all the expectation and all the thoughts and all the images that people have decided we represent and what exactly we are and how great we might be and how you might be in the context of your students the Gedolei HaDor because you're the only Orthodox Jews they've ever come in contact with. When we strip that all aside and we ask, outside of the Elokei Avi, outside of all the Masorah that we stand for and all the rich heritage and all the legacy that we represent and that we share and we teach with others, what is the Zekeli? Bottom line, what does it mean for us? How much have we developed from all the inspiration that we've given others? How much have we pushed ourselves left the Acharei Bamidbar to be something special, to push ourselves to the max, and to have a more deep and meaningful relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam on our own? The Gemara says in Masechta Sanhedrin that one of the first jobs of a melech, one of the first things that a king has to do upon accepting the kingship is he has to write a Sefer Torah. And the Pasuk says, V'karavo kol yimei chayav, he should go around with that Sefer Torah and read it every day of his life. And that is supposed to inform all of the decisions, all the mannerisms, all the way in which the kingship will be led. And then the Gemara tells us, Alfa Pisha Yinichu lo avim Sefer Torah, even if you are the son of the previous king, and your father already wrote and commissioned the writing of a Sefer Torah, still says the Gemara, mitzvah sheyichtov lo mishalo. Yes, my father left me a Sefer Torah, but I have a mitzvah upon becoming the king to write my own Sefer Torah, to make it meaningful to me. And this is not only a halacha, this is not only a Gemara that discusses what the rules are for a king, but it's something for simple subordinates like all of us as well. We will never be kings. But afo pisha inichulo avim Sefer Torah. My father continues to leave me with a very sacred and holy Sefer Torah that I represent. All of us have grandparents who left us with a Masorah that so many others are not blessed to have. And that's what we share, that's what we transmit, that's what we give over, and that's what we're proud of. But afo pisha inichulo avim Sefer Torah. Our parents, our grandparents, leave us over a lot of rich legacy and heritage to be proud of. But mitzvah lo sheyichtov mishalo. We have that obligation to whittle out, to fashion the Sefer Torah of our own, to find the Ribono Shel Olam in our own lives, to study His Torah, not just to transmit everything that we've been given, but to advance on our own and make sure that we exude what the Torah represents and what it's supposed to mean for us in our own personal lives. That's the first mitzvah that's given to a melech, and that's the obligation that anyone in a position of leadership needs to spend time thinking about. Let's just close. I see it's time for Mincha. Let's close with a story about the Bala Tanya. The story is told that the Bala Tanya, when he was in the jail in St. Petersburg, so there was a jail warden who came in to discuss some religious issues with the Bala Tanya. And he goes over to the Bala Tanya and he asks him, you look in Parshas Bereishis, and Adam HaRishon commits the first sin in the world, first sin in history, first Aveir. And the Ribono Shel Olam says to him, Vayikra Elohim El HaAdam. The Ribono Shel Olam calls out to him and he says, Vayomer Lo Ayeka. And he asks him, Adam HaRishon, where are you? So this jail warden goes to the Bala Tanya and he says, don't you believe that God knows everything? So why does he have to ask Adam HaRishon where he is? God should know on his own where Adam HaRishon is at the time. Even if he was hiding. And I'm sure he was ashamed. But how does he not know where he is? And the Baal HaTanya said to him that he doesn't think there's a pasuk in Chumash that's more relevant than that one. Because every so often, said the Baal HaTanya, the Ribbono Shel Olam falls down to Adam, which is every single one of us. And he asks us the same question, Ayeka, where are you holding? What are you doing? Have you accomplished anything? Are you hiding behind all the people that have created an image of what you represent and what you are? Are you just hiding behind the tree somewhere because you're ashamed? Have you ever thought about what the relationship between me and you is really about? Who do you think you're fooling? Ayeka, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. Where are you? Where do you stand? What do you represent? What are you all about? At your core, at your essence. What are you really about? And that, said the Baal HaTanya, is the most difficult question that I face, he said. When I think about what I'm going to answer when the Ribbono Shel Olam asks me, Ayeka. Yeah, you're the great Baal HaTanya. You've done wonderful things. You created an amazing chassidus. You have plenty of people following you. But Ayeka, where are you? I don't care about all of that. Where are you as the one who's trying to inspire others? Have you done anything to work on your own personal inspiration, on yourself? And it's a difficult question, and it's a sensitive question. But when we come together at a retreat as beautiful as this one, and we highlight the respective Avodas HaKodesh that all of us are involved in and all of us are engaging, all of us are doing, it's our duty also to stop ourselves at times like this and ask the difficult but important and sensitive question of Ayeka. The Baal HaTanya's reminder that we need to remind ourselves every so often, where are we holding? Where are we going? What have we done? What are we doing? What does the Ribbono Shel Olam mean to me? Where is my Zeh Keli? And how is that Sefer Torah that I'm supposed to be writing on my own? Where is that up to? How is it looking? Am I studying enough? Am I working on myself enough? Am I doing enough to show the Ribbono Shel Olam that outside of all the public persona that I am, I'm also something very special inside? And I actually bring something to the Jewish people that is very significant. And as we prepare to take leave from this beautiful get-together, from this conference, and as you have probably discussed all the wonderful ideas of how to further your commitment and all of our commitments to Klal Yisrael, to the strong and vibrant continuity of the Jewish people, we can all bless each other with the blessing of Moshe Rabbeinu, Yihi Ratzon Shetishra Shechina B'Masi Yadech, that the Shechina should reside in all that we do. It's not a tefillah, it's an appeal. That the Shechina should continue to reside in all that we do and find a comfortable place in the privacy of our own homes. Thank you again.
We'll read us in Davening Ashrei in 30 seconds. We will end the prayer. Thank you all so much. We'll be in touch about follow-up, action items, surveys, reviews, and the rest. Ladies will be on the right side towards the back. Occupation that way. Ashrei will be